The one who can't sing. The one who's a six. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know her.
You know where I'm going with this.
Listen, she's a six. Socks and sandals all day. Okay.
Well, here we are. We're really committed to our goal of catching up on these damn podcasts. What do you think?
I'm feeling good about it. I feel strong and limber. Coach
great,
put me in.
Yeah, I think we did a great job with Wuthering Heights.
Man, I do too.
Just to throw it back to that. Yeah. So now we're all the way in up to March of 2017, which I don't know if you guys recall, but there was a certain remake of a certain Disney movie that came out with a certain Emma person. Who did very terrible singing, and a CGI beast that gave me night terrors for months. I still have them. And I can never watch Dan Stevens do anything ever again.
I haven't seen it.
I don't know. I saw this trailer, and I actually moved physically farther away from the TV. Like, it was so upsetting to see
him. But
that's
how I felt about all of the things. I didn't want to see it at all. Like, there was the Clock Man.
Oh, don't even get me... The Candelabra is the stuff of night... Like, what they did to the furniture is, like, a visual war crime. Like, it was a nightmare to watch. It was terrible! Anyway, and then Emma Watson can't sing, and whatever. I would like to refer you to my favorite tweet ever about Beauty and the Beast, which came from one Dana Schwartz, who wrote for our New York show last year. But anyway, she was, like, quoting the like... You know, there goes the baker with his bread like always or whatever. And then she was like, and there goes Belle with her daily mean song about us. And now I think about that every day. That's my favorite thing.
Agreed.
So true. Oh, my God. Oh, there's so much there.
Oh, guys. Twitter. You're a constant source of delight.
I love Twitter. Oh, my God. And my Twitter. Okay. My Twitter is blowing up now. This is a great chance.
Oh, that's a good segue.
This is a great segue. So my Twitter is blowing up because so when we do these, what I do is I pull out, like I save all the voting cards that people write on. And I was going through the old voting cards to find one so I could see, like, the order of the pieces, because we record these, obviously, way after the show. And I found one that said... Wait, I'm going to pull it up. This person wrote, I'm assuming it's a she based on the handwriting. She did it in block letters, which she colored in with a pencil. And she drew a bunch of hearts and flowers around it. And she said... The announcer is too loud for the introverted, comma, literary types, period. Parentheses. You don't need to yell, underlined, into the mic. And then they added notes. Next to announcer, they wrote in a box, not the reader. So, Baruch, you're off the hook. And then next to loud, they put another box and wrote, and shrieky. So, you know, I got to find that today, which was super fun. I got to tell you, I've gotten a lot of critiques over the years hosting events. Never have I gotten that one. And I posted it to all of my social medias. It is now the header on my Facebook profile. But my favorite response tweet, which I will now read to you, is David Attenborough voice. These introverted literary types scuttle from rock to rock, subsisting on a diet of whispers and scorn. And in the meantime, I will be changing all of my biographies to say Too Loud, Too Shrieky, which is now the title of this episode.
So welcome to Shipwreck SF, Too Loud, Too Shrieky.
I will be shrieking. My name is Amy Stevenson. You will recognize me as the one shrieking into the mic. That's Casey Childers.
Yeah, I am. Let's get started on this.
And we're going to talk about Beauty and the Beast, which I feel like we need very little introduction for, because everyone in the world fucking knows this shit. So, in keeping with our very cruel practice of assigning people random inanimate things, obviously, we had to assign someone the rose.
Which is a rose.
It's literally a rose. It's a magic rose, though.
Yeah.
It's a little different in the book. The book, it's like, so in the book, which is so funny to me, Beauty is like one of several sisters, and her dad is a traveling salesman, not an inventor. And he's going out on, like, a business trip, which seems... This is a theme. We just did Wuthering Heights. Like, why does everyone just... Anyway, so he's going out on his business trip, his old-timey business trip, and all of his sisters are like, bring me pearls, bring me gold, like, bring me whatever, whatever. And Belle's like, I just want a rose. I've never seen a rose before, because she's, like... Apparently, they're positioning her as, like, the good daughter for, like, not wanting things. I don't know.
Yeah, but so, a rose is pretty ostentatious if you've never seen one.
Yeah. So he finds this rose to, like, pick for her, and that becomes the rose that gets enchanted because he, like, steals it.
Dang.
So it's a different thing. And then instead of her going to, like, rescue him, he goes back to get her. Like, it's crazy. It's so weird and different.
Huh. Thanks, yeah. Disney. I don't know how to feel about all this.
It's weird.
Fair enough.
But anyway, she's good because she's quiet and she wants for nothing. She doesn't eat much and she doesn't know right from wrong. So first up is the rose.
Our first story tonight is titled simply The Rose. Not far from a little town, a quiet village, there was a towering castle that loomed somewhere in the fictional country of France. The castle was beautiful, yes, but held a terrible secret in the highest tower of the highest wing. In a dark and lonely bedroom, there was a rose. It was an enchanted rose that managed to get itself entangled into a plot involving a haggard witch and some spoiled white guy. Trapped under a glass case, it was denied any contact with the outside world. More often than not, the rose was subjected to watching the owner of the castle, once a hideous creature, but now just a beast. Pathetically and very boringly masturbate. Though he never yanked it the same way twice. He tried both paws. He tried autoerotic asphyxiation, as one does. Various warmed fruits to penetrate. And other ways of masturbation. The result was always the same. He could not climax. After exhausting himself, he would weep into his sad erection and dry his tears with his hairy, beastly forearms. Until one fateful day, everything changed. To the rose's surprise, a fresh-faced beauty with bright eyes and a kind heart crept into the bedroom. She was wearing a tight country dress that barely contained her swollen cleavage. She was stunning. Ooh, bonjour, bitch. Yeah, the rose thought to itself. The rose remembered that kinky candlestick Lumiere mentioning some new girl named Belle or whatever. She spotted the rose and removed the glass case. The updraft of air that hit the stem of the rose was so new and exciting that every tip of every thorn shivered with ecstasy. Oh my God. Yes. Moaned the rose to itself. What is this? Belle whispered to the rose, her breath smelling of the gray stuff from the kitchen. Which the dishes claim was delicious. But the rose knew. The rose was not buying it. Something danced across its petals as Belle's fingers grew closer to the rose, and the rose's petals began to spread open to receive her. When the beast burst in! Oh my God, of course this moody cunt is gonna cock block me! Ew, fuck that shit! What are you doing in here? The beast growled to Belle, startling her. He roared as he stumbled over and slammed the glass case back over the rose. Fuck! The rose throbbed with an intense case of blue thorns. Get out! The beast yelled. But I said get out! The beast screamed. Belle's eyes widened, but this time not with fear. And this time, Belle didn't run. No, Belle said with a smirk. The beast was stunned. What? I'm not going to leave. Does that make you mad? The beast was not following. Does this make me a bad girl? Do I need to be punished? She turned her back to him and slowly bent over, offering her tight little behind to be spanked. Listen, lady, I don't have time for daddy issues. Get into it. Belle straightened, disappointed. Out of nowhere, she pulled out a hip harness and an old, tiny porcelain dildo. All right, said Belle. Since you can't take a hint, I guess it's your turn to be punished. The beast bit his lip. And then he caught on. I have been very naughty. I've been very naughty. Oh, shit. What the fuck? The rose said and looked on, astonished. Belle disrobed herself. Beast looked at her pale skin glowing in the moonlight, her impressively large breast accentuated by her incredibly small nipples. Seriously, like 2-centimeter-wide nipples. He then followed her silhouette to the curve of her hips and then over to where her thighs met, where he found a blackberry thicket of pubes. Okay, damn, girl, the rose thought. Yeah, although, I mean, I know it's France and all, but let me introduce you to my friend the Razor, okay? Belle slid on the leather harness and adjusted the buckles. Where did you get that? Asked Beast. My father invented it. He calls it the penis-o-matic, Belle said with pride. Well, that kind of just looks like a strap-on to me, said Beast. Beast ripped off his pants, revealing his body completely covered in hair. Why did he wear clothes again? Oh, well. Get over here, Belle demanded. Beast stumbled to the table where the rose was watching in awe. He gripped the edges and bent over. Belle got behind him and realized they had a problem. Yeah, okay, there's like no way I can get in there. You're like 8 feet tall. We need to fix this. Just then, Beast's dog Ottoman or something ran over and stood under Beast's eager ass. Good boy, the beast said. Belle nimbly got onto the ottoman and sifted and sifted and sifted through Beast's derriere hair until she found what she was looking for. The old stink eye. She took hold of 2 tufts of hair and thrust herself inside of him. The beast growled with pleasure, and Belle purred like a little porn French princess. Yas! Yas, bitch! Get that ass! Yas! The rose cheered. The rose noticed sap oozing out of its stem. Ooh, okay, I'm wet, bitches. I am wet. Beast and Belle took notice. She just continued to thrust with more gusto than the beast thought capable. Could she be the one? Could this be the time? He always knew there must be more than this provincial life. But he never thought some country bumpkin pegging him was the answer. Everything he looked at seemed brighter. Everything he touched seemed softer, sexier. He looked at that rose which he cursed for so long. Do it, bitch. Do it, bitch, the rose silently commanded, and Beast obeyed. He threw the glass case to the ground, shattering it. He roughly grabbed the rose, slowly sticky in stem spew, and then caressed his hairy erection and cried out with surprise and delight. By God, the beast would come this night. Belle's thrusts grew more rapid and deeper. Beast pressed the tip of his peen into the rose's spread petals. Yas, fuck me, beast. Oh, yeah, fuck me. Woo, said the rose. With all the commotion, the beast's beloved servants quietly poured into the room. Lumiere and Cogsworth, Mrs. Potts, the thirsty wardrobe, they were all there, watching Beast get fucked. As Cogsworth's throbbing pendulum struck midnight, The beast forcefully squirted his vin de blanc all over the rose, completely coating it. Tears ran down his cheeks in sweet relief. Was this the tender rose that finally released his load, or Belle's vigorous prostate massage? The world will never know. Beast looked at the once beautiful rose, now wilted and sad, each petal dripping off his bechamel spunk. Oh, isn't there like something important about the petals and whatever. That didn't matter now. For now, the rose had ascended to a higher plane of consciousness and was staring down at the beautiful display in the bedroom, sticky, messy, and full of humanity. Secondly, what Beast didn't realize until he looked around the room was that he and his servants were all human again. They beamed back at him, completely naked and fully erect. You see, he was so disgusted by the haggard witch so long ago that he didn't really pay attention when she said the spell would not be broken by love, but when he finally tried butt stuff. Did you hear that, guys? Butt stuff. It's the secret. The secret to love. There was a soft cough from the other end of the room, and Lumiere took a step forward. In his ridiculous French accent, he asked, Monsieur Menager Six? Belle and Beast nodded excitedly, and they all leapt into bed, entwining themselves and filling every single hole. The rose knew its job here was done. As if on a breeze, everyone in the room heard a soft and sincere, au revoir, bitches. And so ended this tale as old as time of beauty in the beast. The end.
That was The Rose by Meg Trowbridge.
Another Killing My Lobster. I almost just said alum, but she's not an alum. She writes for them. She's a writer. What I should call her is a writer.
Current writer.
She is a current Killing My Lobster writer. And she is delightful and hilarious. Great. So next up is Beauty, who, as I mentioned, is one of several siblings. And what's so funny about her story arc in the book is she goes to live with the Beast. And from day one, he's like, I love you. You're going to marry me. And he just beats her to death with it until she's like, fine, shut up. We'll get married. Shut up. Just stop asking me. It's so weird. He's like blatant from day one. Like, we're going to get married and I'm going to not be a beast anymore.
Oh, man. And you hate folktales. You hate folktales so much.
I don't think I hate folktales. I just think how much time that would have saved.
They are like, all exactly that boring.
They are.
It's just a dude going like, listen, let's get married. It's going to be great. Don't go in the room.
So I like read this for this and I could not for the life of me come up with a moral to this story. Not a single one.
There's no
like takeaway like, oh, I shouldn't do that because no, there's nothing.
Every folktale I've ever read, I'm just like,
why?
Cool. I guess if I had lived in exactly that period of time around there, I would have known not to eat an acorn because that's what'll kill you.
I regret touching the murder moss.
Yeah. It's always that dumb and you're just like, ooh, cool.
This next story is titled The Blossoming of Belle. A year after that night back in France, when the mouth breather Gaston had stabbed her husband, Belle sat outside on the fire escape smoking a fantastic joint. If she dared to look out across the alley, she'd have a perfect view of her neighbor, who every evening at 8 p.m. rubbed a heaping fingerful of peanut butter into her labia and then summon her dog to come over and lick her clean like clockwork. Belle at first tried not to watch. It seemed like breaking a code or something. Hot desire for the strong, persisted tongue of a large wolfish creature wasn't altogether unfamiliar to her, though. And she was thankful for the privacy she'd had to develop those feelings. But she snuck a glimpse anyway, and Belle had to admit, it was pretty hot. The girl was coming wildly, pushing the dog's head away from her peanut-buttered pussy. And as the weed hit her, Belle felt an insistent glow between her legs. She needed to fuck a woman, she decided. It hadn't occurred to Belle, back when she was crooning on library ladders and forsaking the fresh bread of her pastoral life, that it was this particular scenario she had been longing for. But then there were a lot of unknown factors at that time. Only after their elaborate wedding did Belle even consider that she was married to someone who suddenly had a new identity and whose name she actually didn't even know. No way. That's insane, Belle's coworker Jazz exclaimed when Belle told her about her husband. Belle and Beau? Oh my God, that's ridiculous. How did you two even meet? Belle sighed. It's a long story. Does it look like I have somewhere to go? Jazz asked and gestured to the stacks of books she still had left to shelve. Since Belle and Beau moved to San Francisco, Belle had gotten a job at the Booksmith, where she was finally introduced to books not written by dead white men. It turned out that Beau's enormous library primarily housed unoriginal narcissistic poetry by generations of patriarchs in his family, including one particular gem penned by his grandfather entitled, I Am the Sun and the Sunshine, the Thunder and the Lightning, and also everything else. Come on, it can't be that long, Jazz urged her. The truth was that Belle was very drawn to the taut cords of Jazz's neck and the way her teeth grew so close together, like one sparkling silver of marble. And something told Belle that giving Jazz a complete, detailed picture of Beau's curse, her eccentric father, the hostage situation, that weird radioactive rose, her warm friendship with the suave candlestick, and that maternal wardrobe, plus that asshole Gaston, would not get her any closer to more of Jazz's enchanting features. And so she had kept it short and sweet. Okay, my father introduced us. We were both really lonely and had big dreams of becoming other people, which felt at the time like we were meant to be. Oh, okay, but like not anymore? Jazz asked gently. It's hard to say. We've both changed quite a bit since then. Like a lot, Belle had answered. I think I know how you feel, Jazz said, placing a hand on Belle's shoulder. And then she and Belle had looked at each other for much longer than was comfortable, neither of them really wanting the moment to end, but both unsure of what came next. Belle raced for something clever to say, but she couldn't get past anything, so she was like, I'd like to know how you feel naked on top of me. And then someone had walked into the store, and it was over. What Belle really meant by we've both changed quite a bit was that Beau had become a hot little piece of ass in every San Francisco gay scene. When Belle came back in from the fire escape, high as a fucking kite, Beau and his latest boyfriend were rummaging through her old gowns. Hey, Belle, honey, do you mind if I like tear out the bodice on this velvet number for the new dress Al is making for me? Beau asked. Belle was stoned, aroused, and focused on the pint of Ben and Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie waiting for her in the freezer. Sure, the dress was always yours, Bobo. Do whatever you like. Thank you, my love, he said as he shimmied his slithe, now hairless body into a pair of her burgundy tights. After they left, Belle stared at her phone for a while until she got up the courage to call Jazz. 2 hours later, Belle found herself cross-faded at a nice wine bar, telling Jazz the real story of how she had met Beau, or Beast, as she'd known him then. That is some crazy fucked up shit, Jazz said. When Belle was done with the story, Jazz thought for a moment and then was like, dude's fucking ruin everything, Jazz said. Belle noted that Jazz's hand was slowly drifting along her thigh. You know, Jazz ventured, I used to be a princess. I didn't want to marry all the douchebags my dad was trying to set me up with, so I ended up with my husband, Al. But really, I just wanted someone who could give me options. Well, me and my tiger, Raja, Jazz smiled. Smiled at Belle radiantly, a marble-toothed smile. Belle, she said, do you want to come over and play with my tiger? Oh yeah, you guys know what's happening. Which was how Belle and Jazz ended up on the couch. First petting and teasing Raja, and then petting and teasing each other. Jazz pulled her mouth away from their tongue wrestling to whisper in Belle's ear, I can show you the world. I can do it. Shining, shimmering, splendid. And Jazz expertly slid Belle's underwear aside like a pimp. Sliding her fingers over her engorged crown jewel, a sensuous jolt ran through Belle's body. Jazz continued, let me take you wonder by wonder. I can get on that magic carpet ride. She spread Belle's legs and buried her face in Belle's very glistening, very blushed, and very wet enchanted rose. Be my guest, was all Belle could manage to say. Belle had no idea what Jazz was doing down there, but magic was flying around her carpet. She closed her eyes and came over and over and over again, fireworks exploding in her feminine cathedral. It wasn't until Jazz had grabbed Belle's hand and plunged it into her own impatient pussy that Belle suddenly realized Jazz was beside her on the couch, which meant Belle opened her eyes to find Raja the tiger, acertly nosing her hot lava chamber, gently lapping his sandpapery tongue. It sounded like you wanted some animal play, Jazz said. And she bit at Belle's neck. You're so fucking intuitive, Belle gasped, coming even harder than as she embraced the tiger's beastly elegance and Jazz's total attentiveness. I love that you notice me noticing you, Jazz panted gaily, and she prepared to mount Belle's face. It was this cunnilingus totem pole, tiger under Belle, under Jazz, and when Al and Beau suddenly came home. Jasmine? Al asked. Belle? Beau interrupted. Raja? Both men exclaimed. Don't interrupt my grinding, demanded Jazz. The only one whose mouth wasn't currently full of undulating vagina. But when Jazz slid off Belle and they did finally get a glimpse of their husbands, it was clear that Beau was dressed as Belle, yellow dress and all, with a very accurate wig. And Aladdin was sporting a large, furry, wolfish costume, the spitting image of the beast Belle had been longing to fuck. Belle, Jazz began, he's gorgeous, like your twin. And Aladdin, he's so majestic. He's really cute, Belle exhaled. They all shared a long look that was not even a little uncomfortable because San Francisco. Moments later, when Belle was pressed against Bo, who was taking it in the ass from Jazz, while Aladdin's beastly head shook and growled in Belle's lap because Raja was tenderly pawing his balls, Belle was pleased to confirm that she had finally achieved so much more than her old pastoral life. The end.
That was Beauty, as written by Kamala Pulagandla.
Another, like, long-time writer and delightful human, and read everything she's ever written on the internet, because she's hilarious.
I keep thinking, like, what a cool deep bench we've got on this show, but then I realize, no, we're just... These are people that we book for the show all the time.
And they're all great,
good
yeah.
lineups. Good lineups.
I love it. So we put the Enchantress in there, because we had to. And again, her role is slightly different in the book. You should read the book. I should stop telling you about it, because it's not good when I tell you about it, but... She basically curses a rich guy, so I'm about it.
Yeah.
Our third story is titled, Try the Gray Stuff, It's Delicious. It's the gray stuff. I remember being a little kid and like pondering that for way too long. Like, what's the gray stuff? What is it? I wanna go to France and figure it out. Is it like gravy or something? Anyway, gravy. Okay. Wait, do we have any actual French people in the audience tonight? Two! Bonjour! Let's give it up for these two real French people. Bienvenue. Je suis très désolé for everything.
Tutso!
So, I apologize if we're insulting your culture at all.
What?
Oh, you came to Les Mis.
Oh, great. Yes. You were at Les Mis. Okay.
All right. Okay, here we go. Third story.
Yeah.
All right. Bien. Écoutez-moi. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Linda was touring the French countryside to check old spells and see if any stale baguettes were looking for a good time. Being an enchantress... Linda's vagina came and went as they pleased. She had a lot of vaginas. They did what they wanted. The vulva softly opened in her skin, like a luscious mouth, breaking through still water. Sometimes there were three. Sometimes she didn't have one at all. Sometimes she thought about Jeff Goldblum, and like six would show up. Because Jeff Goldblum. Currently, the rumble lover Harley had six labia very entertained. This area was mostly crumbling chateaus and hicks abusing steroids, so Linda was shocked to walk into a castle and see a conventionally attractive lady reading a book and humming about Stockholm Syndrome. Belle looked up with a surprise, but wasn't scared. Even though Linda was wearing a leopard fur coat, riding a motorcycle that wouldn't exist for 600 years, and was roughly the size of a barge. Linda swung off her bike, and it crashed to the floor. "Why are you here, cutie?" Linda asked. "Have you seen the movie Taken?" Belle said. "Nah." "What about the movie Taken 2? "Never heard of it." "What about the movie Taken 3? "No." "Okay, so I was kind of kidnapped, bargain sold, and I guess I live here now. Yay. But like the beast is sweet, I guess, and I started an Airbnb. Like I've been Airbnb-ing out some of the rooms in the East Wing, so it's like not all that bad." Right? Linda's eyes narrowed. "You think the beast is sweet?" Belle fumbled. "Well, it's true that he's no Prince Charming, but I can read in peace here. My village made an entire song just to interrupt my reading. Me reading peacefully here is a very good thing." "Oh, fuck, I'm sorry to hear that." I sang a reprise and I got over it." "I'm Linda, by the way. Linda, the Enchantress." "Oh my God, you're that bitch?" Belle stood up. "Yeah, I'm that bitch. I'm that bitch," Linda curtsied. "You ruined the beast's life. Don't you feel awful?" Linda didn't. When Linda saw how ugly the Beast's heart was, she either had to curse him or elect him to public office, because that shit was ugly. Belle, okay, listen. When I cursed him, he asked, one, does my dick still work? And two, does the magic mirror have an incognito mode so I can watch Mrs. Potts get washed out? The dude's a dick. Gross. I heard she was a water bong in college. Well, I personally prefer to just rub my crotch on the library's rare book section. So you read a lot, huh? Linda asked. Yeah, that's what makes me interesting. Yeah, sure, Linda snorted. All right. Look, said Linda, this story isn't the accelerated reader and the Beast, hon, all right? Girl, you're basically Sleeping Beauty. How dare you? All she did was not wash off her makeup before passing out. Half of my sorority can do that, said Belle. Look, you're using your cheekbones to get castles. And hey, that's awesome. But, bitch, beauty fades. But gold candlesticks last forever. Forever, bitch, Linda said. Whatever. You don't get provincial life. You're a magical elite. You live in a bubble. No, Gilda's the one who travels by bubble. I do motorcycles or Lyft because I am aware. Linda stood to go. I came here to cast hexes and give epilogue. And bitch, I'm all out of epilogue. Wait, Belle said. I can't believe you turned the servants into furniture, Belle said. Linda turned to face her. What? I didn't turn people into furniture. Look, girl, I just fuck the furniture, okay? I'm an enchantress. It's not my fault. If I stick something in my tickle tunnel, it comes out with full Broadway choreography, all right? It's just the way it works. Wait, you fuck the furniture? Belle was intrigued. Okay, so my kink is anthropomorphism. It took two bottles of wine to get the dresser in there. Who helped you? Belle asked. Just me, bitch. What, you don't think a woman can do something on her own? Damn, you do read a lot of books, Linda said. I mean, that's just a lot of stuffing for one stocking. My pussy is magic, all right? And I got multiple pussies, honey. In the magical vagina hierarchy, number one is Beyonce's twin-filled pussy. Number two, Mother Earth, duh. And then there's me, three, most magical vagina. It's how it works. Belle's face shifted. Just a little change. Small, to say the least. Belle had the wise eyes and sturdy chin of a champion box muncher. Linda stared right at that mouth and said, would you like to see my rose garden? Belle thought for a moment and then nodded. Linda's eyes widened. This wasn't just a visit. It could be a sex visit, too. A large purple cushion appeared beneath them. Linda lifted her skirt. Her huge, gorgeous legs met in a patch as smooth and as blank as a crystal ball. Belle placed her hand on Linda's crotch and felt a light vibration. Then labia bloomed out like a whisper. Oh, said Belle, there's something there that wasn't there before. She paddled her fingers against the flesh flower, and another emerged beside it. Belle fingered them expertly, like the captain of a uterus spaceship. Two more perky shaved vaginas appeared, then became concerned about the politics of being shaved, and massive heroic blushes appeared, braided and adorned like pirate beards. Belle gasped. Linda, can I go up to my elbows and tongue you, tongue blitz your hag holes until we both boil over. Can I do that, Linda? Linda teared up with consenting joy. She put on a top hat. A spotlight came out of nowhere. And Linda said, "Ma chérie, mademoiselle, it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that I welcome you tonight. I invite you to relax, pull up a chair, as I proudly present your dinner." Linda spread her legs, then continued, waving her crotch like a wand. "Be my guest, be my guest." Linda sat down on Belle's chest, wrapped her legs around that cute cherie, and ready for Belle's best. "Lick my floor and those curves, why you only lift to serve. Try the clits too, they're delicious. You can't find them, ask the missus. Make me sing, make me dance. After all, Belle, it's your chance, and my pussy is already third best. Come on and fill my venue, grab hold and in you. Be my guest, be my guest, be my guest." The spotlight faded. Belle realized 300 pieces of silverware were watching. Belle didn't care, both a little scared, though thoroughly prepared. Belle began to feast. Belle licked, poked, sucked. Linda fell back and moaned encouragingly. Belle breathed into the lively labia, swabbed them out, told them secrets, and kissed them shut. Linda's wails got louder and turned to spells. Glittery blasts streaked up in the air. Belle sped up. Each of her arms were in Linda, all the way up to the shoulder. More vaginas, more sparks, faster and faster. Belle felt strong hands on her waist. Linda flipped Belle upside down to eat Belle out and complete the circle. Belle relaxed into the pleasure. Linda's moans got louder and louder until she came. Rose petals surged out of her with such force that it pushed Belle out and away. Then it all slowed down. Linda lifted into the air. Covered in light, the rose petals spewed from all of her vaginas. She laughed, moaned, and came so hard that her feet turned to petals. Her legs, her rolling stomach, all of her turned to motherfucking petals, coming and cycling around the room, then gently, silently drifted away. Belle cried one joyful tear. Linda had earned oral from another, and had oraled them in return. Surely Belle had helped Linda break a curse of her own. 5 minutes later, down the road, Linda appeared, fully formed and riding another Harley. She licked her lips and winked at the camera. And then she said, "Oldest trick in the book." The end.
And that was The Enchantress, as written by Joe Wadlington. It's also a third place story.
It's a good story.
Very good.
So we did The Beast, obviously. I hope that you picture Dan Stevens' ruined face the entire time. I know I will be. They also made his knees backwards, and that was upsetting.
Why would they do that?
You gotta watch it, man. It's horrifying.
No, I already saw The Arrival with Charlie Sheen. I'm good on backward knees.
This next story is simply titled The Beast. Standing before a majestic mirror, framed with golden filigree, Beast stared pitifully at his penis. A disappointed groan escaped his snout, and he flicked the tip of his beast hood with an air of disbelief. It lolled like a drunk upon his alabaster ball sack, barely larger than the claw at the end of his impressive paw, and as bald as a sun-kissed peach. Against the copper tufts of his coarse pelt, the skin of his cock jutted out awkwardly, like the thumb of a disapproving infant. What have I done? He hissed, frantic. 2 years. It had been 2 years since Beauty had entered his life. She broke his curse. He broke her hymen. They were made for each other. So eager was Belle in those early days, his cum could barely dry across her tits before she was astride him again, begging for more. She took to fucking like a Parisian courtesan. And he'd been riding the wave of his miraculous transformation ever since. But like all things in life, it couldn't last. And soon, Belle confessed that she often fantasized about the beast that was. Suddenly, the sight of his furless form above her, the feel of his slick, bare loin slapping against her as he plunged deep into her ass, no longer thrilled her. Instead, she would imagine the beast, paws gripping her hips, claws digging into her skin, the musk of his sweat mixing with his unwashed fur, filling her with an insatiable lust. She could only imagine the cock of a beast, the force with which he could fuck her, the feeling of his canines nipping at her clit. Yeah. One night, spent from fucking, Belle turned to the prince. Do you remember the enchantress, the one who turned you into a beast years ago? Belle asked innocently. Are you still in touch with her? Does she, like, still come around? Sleepily, Adam let it slip that, yes, they were acquaintances, but was quick to assure her that they had only fucked once, and it was when he was still a beast, and it was way long before he even met Belle, like the night before or whatever. Honey, no, okay, I don't care about that, Belle said, waving a cum-crusted hand. We've all been there. I wondered if she could... Adam grimmed, reading her mind. Oh yes, Belle. She certainly could. He was already imagining plunging into Belle and the enchantress's holes. First one, then the other. Watching them swap his spunk from mouth to mouth like it were chantilly cream. Some nasty, nasty chantilly cream. Belle gasped with delight. Oh, really? So she could make you the beast again? For like one night? Adam froze. His asshole puckered. Oh, that? And so the next morning, after meeting with the enchantress, she agreed to grant Belle's request. At sundown, you will be the beast again, but you won't be the only one transformed because of magic shit. All in your castle will return to their former selves. Now, are you... Yeah. Okay, very well. Thanks. I'm a prince. I interrupt people. Bye. Prince Adam interrupted, then left the fairy's chambers before she could finish. Typical asshole. And thus, that brings him to the present moment, here, addressing the fact that his entire body didn't quite make the change. He vacillated between horror and shock. There, where he expected to see a cock of a size and stature appropriate for a beast, the cock of a somewhat idiotic, self-absorbed prince remained. He'd always loved his penis. And indeed, for a human man, it was suitable. However, in light of his monstrous new form, Adam's dick barely registered above his fur line, and the hairless flesh that comprised it gave his loins the visage of scorched earth. Perhaps Belle would be okay with it, he thought. The contrast was a little startling, sure, but it was old Beastie. She loved old Beastie. Surely she would see past that she was his wife after all. He took a deep breath, called for her, and waited. Yes, my lo-. Belle stopped in the doorway, frozen. The Beast she first loved, standing before her, complete with the cock she first fucked. Okay. What a gift! What a prize! Beast anxiously read her expression, waiting for something, anything, even a simple, what sociopath would transform everything but the dick out of her mouth. Instead, Belle leapt towards him, taking his snout into her mouth, rubbing her tongue along his beastly teeth, clutching his ram horns or whatever with her tender hands. Because he had, like, horns and shit. Ah, fuck me, you beast, Belle shouted, wrapping her legs around him. It was like straddling the trunk of a tree. He tossed her into the bed. This is it, our one night. Ah, yeah, Belle exclaimed, shredding her clothes. Beast could hardly contain himself at the sight of Belle in such rapture. He could see her drenched pussy glistening like early frost on his beloved roses, because he, like, really liked roses. He quickly mounted the bed, positioning himself over his squirming bride, his dick and tail fully erect. He noticed her eyes cast behind him, and when he followed her gaze, saw his attendant staring back, wide-eyed. It was really weird. We thought we heard raised voices. Cogsworth the clock sputtered. Mrs. Potts, Lumiere, and Babette peeked out from behind. Some privacy, please, be started, but Belle interrupted. Oh, no. Honey, why don't we let them join? She purred. Haven't you always been curious? Well, yeah, B said. Of course, but he could not finish before the clattering of horny houseware rushing towards the bed drowned out all the silence. The clamor of porcelain, wood, feathers, and wax was like tripping into a clearance rack at Pier 1. But only sexier. Beast could wait no longer as he dove Adam's dickhead first into Belle's waiting snatch. Belle gasped, back arcing, and Babette began feverishly dusting down her torso with her feathered bottom, stomping to tickle her clit as Beast fucked her. Lumiere's wicks grew bright at the sight, and he stretched his candles over Belle's bouncing breast, wax dripping down the shafts and onto her hardened nipples. Owee-wee. Cogsworth had situated himself by Belle's head, the tiny door of his golden pendulum propped open, dipping the rounded end of it in and out of Belle's hungry mouth. She slurped on it eagerly, and the hands of Cogsworth's clock face hotly pointed to 6 and 9. Yeah. Beast was quickening his thrust at the sight of this enchanted orgy when he met the sultry eyes of his favorite kettle and snatched her up from the bed. I think Belle might like a pot of teapots, he growled. Oh, darling, be my guest. She whistled coquettishly, and in one deft motion, he removed his cock from Belle's pussy, replacing it with the porcelain spout. He listened to Belle's pleasured shrieks as he slid the teapot-turned cock in and out of her, and suddenly, overcome with desire for that fat-bottomed kettle himself, he tossed off the lid, stuffing his cock and balls deep into a pleased Mrs. Potts. He teabagged her ceramic cunt, fucking her while fucking Belle. For like a really long time. Clink, clank, tick, tock, swish, swish, it says here. Beast's eyes rolled back into his sockets as he felt his balls tightened. He removed his kettle-adorned cock from Belle's slick pussy just in time to see his cum oozing out of the finely tempered spout. Belle sat up eagerly, sending kitchenware flying, and wrapped her lips around the end of Mrs. Potts and sucked the steeped cum of her beast, thinking it the finest she'd ever tasted, until every drop was gone. Thoroughly spunked and spent, the contents of Beast's kitchen cabinet lay strewn across the bed, as he and Beauty relished in the afterglow. Mrs. Potts was still firmly attached to the end of his cock, and they lived happily ever after. The end.
That was The Beast, as written by Sarah Manolis.
Imagine trying to waltz with backwards knees. Anyway, how do you even follow someone who's dancing?
How do you sit on a toilet?
I don't know.
Or whatever that equivalent of a toilet was in that time.
Maybe it's like the thing with cat feet where it's like a really long foot and that's actually the ankle.
Oh, there's a dew claw.
I'm upset with this.
Don't get hit with that dew claw.
I'm really upset about this.
While you're making love.
Oh, he's gotten so many bones in his legs.
Plus cats have that barbed wiener.
Yeah, they do. Let's not talk about that. Oh God, does the beast have a barbed dung?
Possible, but it's also probably really small.
I don't remember that from the fairy tale. Yeah, if you're gonna curse him, like, I feel like you have to, right?
It can't give him like a big old barb.
Someone that's like a, yeah, give him a big old fucking, like,
all right, you're gonna be ugly, but you're gonna be hung.
You're gonna have, so like, you're gonna have to be on TV. Yeah,
like, you're gonna be in movies a lot, like porno movies.
Yeah,
whatever the that,
with, like, a bag
that
time over your period. Head.
No, because they would just be like beast out banging, and he'd be driving around in a carriage, like, picking people up. Like, would you fuck this beast for 500 shillings? I mean,
well, it would be like at a circus, right? Or like whatever.
Or Franks. It'd be Franks.
Franks. Franks. Let's be clear here. They would be Franks.
Combien de l'argent pour le fuck that beast?
There's nothing else wrong with the thing you said except that it would be Franks. Everything else adds right up. Moving on. So what are the odds? That's another one of my favorite Beauty and the Beast tweets, of which apparently there are many, but one of my other favorite ones is, like, so there's like a non-zero chance that one of Beauty's father's old inventions killed her mother, right?
It's so accurate.
And whoever thought, I was like, oh yeah, and you know what, actually that's probably
dead night. He's a bad inventor, and he's just in there, he's like, well, I hooked this axe up to this motor, this steam power.
What could possibly go wrong? Well, in the movie, they make a whole big subplot of the mother and how she, like, dies of the plague, and Belle has a memory. Well, she's not Belle, sorry. She's Beauty in the book. But anyway, she has a big memory about it. It's dumb. And I was like, what's the point of that? Thanks, I wanted to be sad for a minute. Like, what? Anyway, like I said, in the book, which we try to do the book whenever possible, although we knew everyone was going to do the film for this one, but her dad in the book is not an inventor. He's just a salesman, which is arguably more boring.
Yeah. And,
you know.
It's the inventor of the time.
Yeah. Is it?
This next story is titled, let's see, Beauty's Father. Here we go. Once upon a time, in a far-off France, a merchant lived with his children. He loved them all equally. There was the pretty one, who he had named the pretty one. But like in French, though, to remind himself that she was the best, and also smartest and nicest, and best at croquet. And there were also 11 others who weren't important. And who, because they weren't important, hadn't gotten around to naming yet. Honestly, they were the worst. Always saying shit like, Dan Savage is actually hella problematic, Dad. And other things like, any feminism that centers white women while refusing to acknowledge the intersections of gender with race, class, or ability, or racist lived experiences of hierarchical discrimination, and falls in both theory and praxis, Dad. Or dude, I actually don't identify as a girl dad. So like when you were so happy because Belle told you she wasn't a boy and you said that made it even with six and six. Anyway, I know that it's important to you, but can you please stop saying you have six daughters? The dad would merely respond, Dan Savage is a perfect, gorgeous angel, okay? God. And obviously he had six daughters. That's just how math works. What, was he gonna have four daughters, four sons, and four other? No. That's like twice as many people. Anyway, ew. So long story and kind of boring, but for plot reasons, one day their house burned down. Their friends now hated them for some reason. And their ships either exploded, were attacked by undead pirates, or shipwrecked, leaving only a child and the metaphor for cannibalism and other shit. The merchant's family had lost everything, and it wasn't nearly as fun as Les Miserables had made it seem. So when he heard that one of his boats had survived and that it happened to be full of gold, he immediately celebrated by promising to buy his children whatever they wanted. But all of his children's requests were shit like platform for social change. What the fuck? Or shit like charity. How about some charity? And seemed like they were in that involved work and ew, fuck work. So he quickly zoned out until finally they came to Belle, the pretty one, who looked off to the distance and asked only for a rose. The merchant smiled, finally. His perfect, wise, and very pretty daughter had saved him once again from having to listen to all the less pretty ones and their ridiculous requests. What was that? One more time, dear. Tell me what you want. She looked off into the distance and said, a rose. Of course, the pretty one, of course, he promised. Basically, that didn't work. As the merchant rode home from a boat decidedly empty of gold, he came across a mysterious castle wherein oranges fruited and roses bloomed under a warm breeze, even though outside the gate snow was packed to 4 feet deep. Dismounting his horse and entering the palace, he found it deserted, but with a feast newly set out and steaming hot. Next to the meal, there was a short note which read, "Dear sir, by staying the night, you affirm your consent to engage in a power exchange dynamic with yours truly, the master of this house. Your safe word is Gaston. And may be used at any time for any reason, and will immediately bring an end to any scene currently in progress. If this is unacceptable to you, you may still eat the food provided, but please leave by morning. Sincerely, Gary." Fet life handle, Booty and the Beast. The merchant was intrigued. He had never done anything like this before, although of course he had heard the gossip about the Marquis de Sade and Milady de Winter, and his nipples quivered with curiosity. After a brief reflection over his spotted dick, which was a real food that people eat, that actually exists, but also literally over his penis there were actually like spots on it, he decided that he would stay the night and see what excitement the next day might bring. He awoke bright and early the next day and went walking through the castle's gardens, jittery with anticipatory energy for what surprises last night's note might lead to. As he strolled, he saw a hedge of roses, and remembering the pretty one's request, absently plucked one. Immediately, a voice roared out from behind him. "Who told you that you might gather my roses, swine? Wasn't it enough that I allowed you to be in my castle and was kind to you? This is the way you show your gratitude, by stealing my flowers? Your insolence shall not go unpunished." The merchant, terrified by these words, dropped the rose and throwing himself on his knees, cried, "Pardon me, noble sir. I'm truly grateful to you for your hospitality, which was so magnificent. I really love that gray stuff, and I imagine that you would be offended by my taking such a little thing as a rose." "Nevertheless," the voice boomed, "you must be punished for your crime, for I am Gary. And Gary suffers no disrespect." Sneaking a peek up from the ground, the merchant saw that the voice belonged to an enormous beast, clad in leather and latex, and apparently halfway between a bear and a water buffalo. In his hand, he held a long red flogger with anthropomorphic eyes that was edging the beast on in a thick French accent. "Oui, oui, monsieur. Punish the slutty little flower thief." "What the fuck?" The merchant thought to himself. "That thing is talking. Holy shit." But he didn't talk because he was scared. "So you agree you must be punished, you pig. You slave, you Calvinist." The merchant gasped. "Please, monsieur, I am no Protestant." "Silence, worm." This is getting crazy.
All right.
The merchant squeaked and fell back on his face, but again felt that tingling excitement in his butt. And almost unconsciously, raised his ass as he lay. "I know how you can atone," boomed the beast. Pick up that fucking flower and take off your pants. Every stroke of my flogger..." "Hello, that's me!" cried the flogger. "Bite off one puddle and count how many it's been." As he swooped in close. He swooped in close, so his mouth was right next to the merchant's ear, and whispered, "Is that okay?" You seem kind of new to this, buddy. I'm just checking in that you're cool with this." The merchant looked at the beast and was like, Yeah, it is, master, yeah. "I'm okay with it," he whispered back, already imagining the feel of sentient leather upon his bare ass. "All right, good, whispered the beast, and returned to standing with a quick bite to the merchant's ear while removing the merchant's pants with a practiced hand. "Count the strokes," he continued, "and tell me a way you can do better to promote social justice." "Hold up, what?" said the merchant. "Smack, I didn't say you could ask questions, worm. Only count and self-critique." The blow stung, but like in a hot way. And the merchant was hella into it. "One," he gasped, and tore off a petal, the thorns biting into his hand as he tried to hold the flower still. "My daughters say I should include people of color more in my social circles." Smack! "Only people of color!" shouted the beast as he flogged and cracked and cackled maniacally. "Two, and gay and lesbian people as well, master." Smack! "What about bi and trans people? What about people of size?" the beast thundered. "Three, but my man crush Dan Savage says they don't count." "What?" "Oh, shit, that is fucked up," said the flogger. There was a pause, and then the beast spoke slowly. "Everyone, regardless of gender identity, color, ability, size, or sexual preference, has a valid experience," he said. "But I can see the privilege is too deeply ingrained in you. I think I'll have to fuck it out." Futra! At this, a squat purple dildo waddled out of the bushes and approached the scene. "Yes, master?" it asked in a weird accent for some reason. "Futra," he said, his voice as hard as the merchant's cock, "I need you to fuck this non-intersectional swine." I need you to fuck him so hard he reexamines his white cis monosexual privilege. I need you to fuck him, and I need you to make it slow and excruciating, and I need you to recommend him some better fucking podcasts. The merchant lay on the ground, really confused and trembling in fear, but still turned on. Safe word remembered, but not used, realizing slowly how unnuanced his understanding of social justice had been. I will do my best, sir, replied Futra, waddling towards the merchant's butt. And dear listeners, because this is a fairy tale, it actually worked. The merchant became hella woke magically and loved all of his children equally, regardless of how pretty they were, and presented the beast with his most prized possession, his magical pink rosebud, which means a prolapsed anus from all the butt stuff. The end.
And that was Beauty's Father, as written by Persephone Karnstein.
Yeah.
Is it Karnstein or
Karnstein? I think it's Karnstein. I think you were right. Yeah.
Damn.
Another longtime writer. And, of course, because we are cruel, terrible people, we had to assign someone the library, and of course, Lily, having won Wuthering Heights, snatched it right up and wrote this amazing piece featuring the other character that What's-Her-Face is known for.
This last story is titled Tale as Old as Balls. The scent of paper and ink, it haunted Belle from the moment she left the library. Sure, she knew what books smelled like before this, but to see and feel and smell so many in one room, it was almost too much for her bibliophile ass. As soon as the beast was asleep, she raced back to the library and shut the doors. Books gently tumbled down to greet Belle as the shelves and walls of the library changed shape. The library walls, now resembling a smiling face, said hi to her. Belle smiled back as she picked up one of the books, now at her feet. Belle's fingertips brushed against the soft leather binding and traced the title. Excuse me. Oh, Les Liaisons Dangereuses. Excellent choice, my dear, the library murmured. The books and shelves started rattling. The desk and reading chair scooted towards the scene. Belle settled into the chair and threw her feet up on the desk, flipping through a few pages. Her eyes widened. The inkwell and quill toppled over. Belle gasped in surprise. Mon Dieu, she exclaimed. Oh, how absolutely scandalous. Belle started to close the book. But her fingers began tracing the letters again. She breathed deep, once more smelling the books, and her body ached for more. The book trembled in her hands. Ink started dripping off the pages and into her hands. Is it to your liking, Belle? The library asked. Twirling her perfect princess ponytail around her fingers, she glanced up at the library's face. Well, yes, but I want more, she said. We can fix that, the library responded. And a secret passageway suddenly opened. Hold tight, the library said. Belle clung to the reading chair and was rushed through the passageway. She shivered in delight as she tried taking in her new surroundings. The room was barely lit, and chains rested against the books and walls. She walked towards the shelves, trying to read the titles. What is this place? The chains thumped heartedly against the shelves as a cry of joy echoed. Welcome to the restricted section, Belle. The library said. It's only for advanced readers. Few are worthy enough to enter. The library paused as another cry rang out. In fact, I've only ever met one other person who has the same appreciation for literature as you. Belle moved forward, squinting to read the titles. Arabian Nights, Fanny Hill. Oh, a whole section on the Marquis de Sade. The chains quickly wrapped around her wrist as she reached for the books. She threw her head back in ecstasy. The library chuckled. And a moan echoed lightly. Given your shared enthusiasm and that you're both here right now, I think you should meet, the library said as the books vibrated. But it would help if we had some light. The moaning stopped, and suddenly someone yelled out, Lummis! Suddenly, all the lanterns in the restricted section were lit. Belle stepped forward to see a woman chained naked against a bookshelf, ink and sweat dripping down from her brow. Her eyes met Belle, and they stared at each other in disbelief. Belle, this is Hermione Granger. She is the brightest witch of her age, the library said. Hermione, this is Belle. She's French, I guess. Hello. The two women murmured hellos as they tried to process the fact that they both looked really identical. The library chuckled. I must say, the resemblance is uncanny. And the fact that you share the same literary desires, well, I must be the luckiest library in the world. And to have both of you here right now, the library exhaled, releasing a wave of book perfume into the room. Both Belle and Hermione shuddered with pleasure. Do you like what you see, Belle? The library asked. Do you want to be chained too? Belle shook her head. I told you I want more. I want to be in charge. I want to have my way with the books. I want to dominate them. Hermione groaned deeply and leaned back against the books, writhing in the chains. A few books behind Hermione popped out and spread their pages, flattening themselves against her breasts and pelvis. A few pages started fluttering back and forth against her clit. How novel of you. Boom. Boom. Hey, it had to happen. Come on, guys. The library said, as more books started fluttering their pages against Hermione's and Belle's legs. Hermione moaned, as Belle grabbed a bookmark and made her way to a shelf full of colorful Daniel Steele paperbacks. The books shuddered erotically. And Belle gently ran her fingers down their spines. Oh, you bad little books. You want me to spank you, don't you? The books shook endlessly, their fonts bulging with desire. Do you want me to leave a mark? Oh, yes, the library murmured. Yes, yes, Hermione cried out. Belle drew a deep breath and spanked the paperbacks with the bookmark. Both the library and Hermione cried out in joy. Ah! Belle kept spanking the books, and ink started dripping from the pages again. The paperbacks became hardcovers very fast. And the fonts swelled some more. A page fluttered out of one of the books, reading, "Warning, contains calligraphic content." Ink continued to splatter onto Belle's face and hair, and she grabbed a quill as she walked back to Hermione. The two women gazed into each other's eyes. Hermione nodded, and Belle continued to spank the books as she gently traced the quill against Hermione's now ink-splattered bod. The library moaned, as Hermione's hips bucked. Belle grinned and spanked the books harder, dragging the quill past Hermione's belly button. Hermione clenched her chains and cried out, "Swish and flick!" And that's precisely what Belle did to her clit. The swollen books started uncontrollably tumbling out of their shelves, ink spurting everywhere. Belle ripped her dress off and strapped on a heavy, cloth-bound book, making sure to carefully wrap the book in protective plastic wrapping. She climbed on top of Hermione, looking back at the library walls before Gutenberg pressing the book against her new literary lady friend. The two women began to grind against the book as the library moaned, "Oh, yes." Pages started flying out and lightly cutting Belle's and Hermione's skin. They cried out and licked and sucked each other's cuts as they continued to thrust against the book. Another wave of book perfume swept across the library, and the women started frenetically rubbing their clits against the book strap-on, making the plastic wrap crinkle in rhythm. Suddenly, all the books exploded with ink, and Belle and Hermione screamed as they simultaneously climaxed. The pages floated to the floor, fonts twitching in delight everywhere. And the chains loosened from Hermione. She and Belle climbed down and leaned against the shelves, catching their breath, wiping ink and sweat from their eyes. "Now that is what I call an epic," the library said with a smirk. The women rolled their eyes in unison as they gathered their things and walked back to the main library. Belle paused to fix her perfect princess ponytail and smiled back at the library. "It's good to know I'm your type," she said, winking. And then she said, "I'll be back for pagination soon." The library let out a pleasurable sigh as Belle and Hermione walked out, arm in skinny arm. The end.
And that was The Library, as written by Lily Miller. That's also the first place finisher.
She won twice in a row, didn't she?
Yep.
Good for her. And that's what we got. As I always say when we end this whole shebang, like us on Facebook to see our posts about our upcoming events. You can also go to booksmith.com/shipwreck if you're not a Facebooker. I don't blame you. Tickets for the shows are $10 advance, 12 door. We're here on the first Thursday of every night at the Booksmith, which is also our home base and where we're recording. So if you hear bookstore sounds in the background, just try to close your eyes and imagine yourself being here.
It's in the library.
Swampy upstairs. Yeah, that's what we got. Thanks for listening, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
There was this table behind me, and I couldn't stop hearing them. They started, and they were like, "Well, I went and saw The Baby Driver. I don't know what everybody's so excited about." And then this other guy is like, "Well, did you see that new Beauty and the Beast?" And another, and like the guy at the table's like, "What, the live one?" And he's like, "Yeah, the live one."
It's not live. It's fucking whatever.
And then he's like, "Anyway, they kept saying that she's like so beautiful."
Oh, my God.
"But she's like at best a 6.
I love problem with Beauty and the Beast.
And now everybody's saying that she's so beautiful.
What? I would ride and die for her. I'm just saying. Like, I don't really care about her politics or her feminism, whatever, because I feel like that's very advantageous for her career-wise, but, like, her face could get it. Her face is great.
I turned around. Socks and sandals for days.
Of course. Of course. Dudes in socks and sandals are the one that's like, Emma Watson's all right, I guess.